Welcome to Innovator Insights from Idea to Impact. I am your host, Henrik Johansson. I am the CEO and one of the founders of Gemba. Gemba helps entrepreneurs and companies to turn their great ideas into awesome new consumer products. Please stay to the end of the podcast and you'll learn how you can be our next guest on Innovator Insights from Idea to Impact. Let's do it. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Innovator Insight podcast, where we talk to successful entrepreneurs about their journey from initial idea to finally creating a successful product and having an impact on the world. Today, we're super excited to have Jagath Narayan. He's the founder and CEO of Ordoro. Ordoro helps e-commerce entrepreneurs to streamline all the stuff after you sell the product, the shipping, inventory, drop shipping, etc., so they can focus on growing. So very complementary to where Gemba helps people develop new products, Ordoro helps them manage the e-commerce business once they launch those products. So Jagath, we're super excited to have you here. Welcome on board.
Likewise. Yeah, excited to be here. You guys have a great platform. Got to know it a little bit over the last few weeks, and it's exciting, to be on this podcast.
Yes. But so before we talk business, want to learn anything about your business and how you got started. But first, maybe tell people a little bit about yourself. Where do you live? What do you do when you're not working? You have family, pets?
Yeah. So I live in Austin, Texas. I've been here for 15 years. Just a little backstory about me. I grew up in India. I was there till about 22 years old, did my undergrad, and then got a scholarship at Texas A&M right after. So I just landed in Texas and I never left Texas. Yeah. I lived in College Station for a couple of years for university, for the master's program. Moved to Dallas. I was there for around 8 years and then moved to Austin and been here for a while. Outside of work, it's like, I mean, once you're a founder, there's nothing much else. So this is what I mostly do because it's kind of fun, right? And I'm sure you can relate to it. When you start your own company, it's a lot of hard work, but you also have to be in the mindset that you don't really think of it as work. It's a thing that you do. You kind of immerse yourself in it. So that's the truth. I don't have really any other hobbies outside of it. Do have a family, two young kids. So yeah, free time. All four of us, we just like hang out, do something, go outside, explore. We love eating in these trailer parks, so we find new trailer parks.
Oh, yeah.
Interesting food. Yeah. There are a lot of them. Austin's like really good for that. And I think that scene has grown over the last 5-10 years. It's become really good. So, yeah, so that's mostly what we do outside of work.
Yeah, so great. Your answer made me think of Jensen Huang, the CEO of NVIDIA. I think they asked him about if he has a good work-life balance. And he said, yeah. It's great. I work all the time. I wake up, I work, I come home, I work. It's great. Great balance.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And I think, I mean, there is truth to it. I think I'm obviously, it depends on like what exactly you're looking for. If you like immersing yourself, if you're having a lot of fun, that's great. And that's what you do. If you're not having fun, then you go find other hobbies, building stuff, all that. So yeah.
Yeah. So true. Yeah, I think it was the founder of Patagonia too, who talks about his measure of successful person is like someone where you don't really know if you're working or not. You're just like, you're doing your life's passion. You're working, you're not working. And
exactly,
I love his definition of that. Like if that's because most people go through life, it's like, oh, work, it sucks. And then waiting for the weekend. And then, but if you love what you do,
I saw this Twitter. It's interesting you mentioned this. Yes, just yesterday I saw this Twitter thread about Linus Torvalds, and someone talks about like how is this guy still working? Why does he still need to work? And he's been doing this for like what, more than 25 years, right? And then someone just like says that's because everyone else thinks he's working. In his mind, he's not working. He's just having fun. So that's the whole point of this. I think, and that's a key to entrepreneurship too, because as you know, you've been at this for a few years too. It can be really tough, right? It can be like mentally challenging.
Yeah, of course.
A lot of like really difficult times. So the way your internal mindset, the way you're framing it internally matters a lot. And if you think of it as, okay, You have to have the journey mindset. This is just part of life. This is what you're going to do. There are going to be ups and downs, and assimilating that deep into your psyche is very important in successfully going through the journey.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. Yeah, I think sometimes, there's talk, like what I said, if you love what you do, it doesn't feel like you're working well. I mean, that doesn't mean that it's not really hard, right?
Yeah,
Just like
exactly. Yeah.
running a marathon, you may love running a marathon and the experience of it, but that doesn't make it easy. It is a very, very difficult job to
Yeah, it can
be.
be mental torture, and then yeah, there are so many people who talk about it. But if you are willing to go through it, there's a huge reward. Obviously, if you have a successful business, there is a financial reward at the end of it. But even through the journey, if you're willing to go through and bear all the pain, I think there are like these points of like clarity and win, and it's amazing. That's like there's a lot of great feelings associated with it.
Awesome. All right, so we're getting ahead of ourselves a little bit. Tell me about so you, did you come from a family of entrepreneurs? Was it a given that you were going to be an entrepreneur, or what did you do right after college?
No, it's exact opposite, and I think this is it's not unique to me. So I grew up in middle class India, right? And then it's not entrepreneurship is not very common in particularly in the region that I come from. The most common thing for people to do is like you, and it is a joke, and among all Indian Indians in the US can relate to it. When you grow up, your parents want you to be either a doctor or an engineer. Those are the two professions everyone's aiming for. You either become one of those, and then you have like a decent life, or you're like kind of struggling. You basically are. So that's the mindset that most of us grow up with. So growing up, no, I wouldn't say entrepreneurship was the big thing in my mind. But what I kind of knew was that I like building stuff. So pretty early on, as I don't know, maybe it wasn't like around middle school or high school, I started coding, programming, right? The first programming language was BASIC, and I really loved it. It's like the whole idea of like creating something. Yeah, it's not a physical object, but it's still like creating a program. It felt like there was something amazing about it. So I'm mostly a self-taught programmer, so I got deeper and deeper into this. And then I always, even through college, undergrad and master's, I was always doing like side projects, so like I was coding a lot, right? Just doing like fun projects on the side. Even during the summer break, I was there was like a friend of mine whose dad was a professor at a medical professor at the university, and he needed like a lot of data analysis. So he and I, my friend and I, we just like started writing code in C to help him do a lot of data analysis. So that was always there. And naturally, as after college, I kind of knew that, okay, I want to do something where I want to be building something, and programming was the natural thing that came to me. So it had to be like I knew that it was going to be in tech, and I knew that at some point I will launch something. So the history of this, and I guess that's kind of where you were going with this, is how did I end up with this? It was more about the idea that, okay, I knew that I was going to launch a business, and it had to be in the software tech space because that's a space that I really loved and enjoyed and most familiar with. So then it was searching for the right problem to solve, right? So the need to launch something came first, and then finding the right problem, because if you solve the wrong problem, it's kind of pointless. So I explored three or four different problems and then kind of landed on this while I was in grad school, and
So you
that's how
went
I
back and
launched
got your
it.
MBA a few
Yeah,
years later.
correct. So that's exactly what happened. So did my undergrad, then got a master's in industrial engineering. That's how I came to the US. But after that, I worked for a company in Dallas. It was in supply chain management for about 8 years. They are now called Blue Yonder. It was a company called i2, which went through a couple of acquisitions, and now it's part of Blue Yonder. So there we were solving supply chain problems, like inventory management, order fulfillment, demand forecasting, all for like large corporations. So the clients were like GM and Chrysler and all of that. That was my first job out of a first real job, really. I was in the product manager. I was like a junior product manager for a while, and then I got into consulting, where I would actually travel to these client sites and learn about their problem. So I did that for about 8 years, and then I got my green card towards the end of that. And after that, I was like, okay, this is the time for me to really launch something on my own. went back to business school because I felt like I needed a little bit more like grounding. Not everyone needs that, but in my personal scenario, I felt like that was the right path. So went through that. And then when I was in B school, decided that, okay, this is the time. And when I come out of B school, I don't want to go through the traditional corporate path of like, I think what a lot of people do when you come out of MBA program is like either go work for a consulting firm, one of the big consulting firms, or if you're in finance, you go to Wall Street, or you join like a big brand company, right? I did not want to go that path because I was like, this is my opportunity. And if I don't pursue this now, I'll never pursue this ever again. And that'll be like a huge tragedy of life. So I started exploring a lot of different areas. So I kind of knew, I think there were three different areas. Two of them were like, in hindsight, they were really stupid. I'm glad that I didn't pursue those. The thing about this, so the way this idea came about is, in that, so MBA is a 2-year program, right? In that summer break, a lot of pretty much everyone tries to do an internship at like large companies with the idea that that internship is what translates into a job. And then when you graduate, you go back there. I did not want to go to a traditional big company. I was looking for small businesses. And I ran into there was a small business who was an e-commerce entrepreneur. I think he was selling probably $1 million worth of goods every year, like GMV was $1 million. And he needed some help because he was a doctor who was just selling some products online. And he didn't know much about like running e-commerce. So he said that, okay, if someone's willing to like help me figure this out for free for a couple of months, I'm willing. So I partnered up with him and he had a small warehouse in Austin. So I spent the whole summer in this hot warehouse, like, you know how hot Austin gets in July, August, right? So I was there. His warehouse had like 3 or 4 employees. They were like picking, packing, and shipping orders. So I was there helping them, looking at how stuff ran. And then I came from a very different world. I came from this large corporate world where I've seen these massive warehouses, multi-billion-dollar companies. This was the exact opposite end of the spectrum. But I could see some parallels. I could see that, okay, some of these problems are the same. They're at a very different scale. He did not have any tools. He was doing a lot of stuff in spreadsheets. He was using QuickBooks for accounting, but his inventory management was not inventory was not being managed well. He had like stock stuck in certain products. There were slow movings. That means his cash was stuck there, and he was taking these credit card loans. So I kind of realized that, okay, there is an opportunity here, right? There was no good software at that time doing this. And around that time, Shopify was growing at a very rapid pace. Shopify was kind of revolutionizing the SMB space of e-commerce.
So
So I
this
kind
was
of put all
like
these
2010 around there.
2010, 2012, yeah, around 2010. So I put all these pieces together and realized that this is a really good, it looks like a really good opportunity. But then that was not enough proof. It's just one data point. So we needed to validate it, right? So what I did was, this was in the summer break between the first and second year. Second year of MBA program, I decided to, because one of the classes, I was heavily focused on entrepreneurship. There was this class in UT about how do you write a business plan, right? And then in that, the whole goal is they emphasize about like validating your market. Just because you have an idea doesn't mean that it's good, right? A lot of ideas can really be stupid. So the idea is you need to like validate that people actually need this solution that you have in mind, and you need to really understand the problem. So you need to talk to a lot of potential customers. So I partnered up with two other people in my class who were also fellow MBA students, and we decided to focus on this problem with the idea that, okay, we're going to write a business plan at the very least, and then by the end of it, we will know is this a genuine problem or not, right? And if it's a genuine problem, then yeah, then we can see, you know, the next natural step is to actually launch with it. But maybe at the end of it, we'll realize that, okay, this is actually not worth pursuing. So we pursued it for what was like 3 4 months. We cold called a lot of e-commerce entrepreneurs. We asked them about where they sell, what products they sell, and how do they ship things, and how do they manage inventory. And by the end of that process, we kind of realized that, okay, there is enough of a market for it. People are willing to pay probably a few $100 a month if we can solve this using in a SaaS software. If you can have like an elegant solution for this. And that was the birth of Herdero. By the end of that, in about 4 or 6 months, I don't remember how long it was, we were all clear that, okay, there is clearly a market for it. Now it's a question of like, can we solve it in an elegant, efficient way that SMB market, people want, these are not like super tech savvy entrepreneurs. Most of them are like small business owners. So the software has to be very user friendly. It should be built in such a way that there is training is minimal, self onboarding doesn't need too much customer support and all of that. So we were clear that there was an opportunity, and that's how the idea was born.
That's awesome. That's really interesting. A couple of things I want to double click on. Like, so you basically decided that you were going to be an entrepreneur, that you were going to start a business before you actually knew exactly which business you were going to pursue.
100%. Yeah, that's, I think that's a very good way of looking at it. And then I was, even before I launched into this, I was really attracted to a lot of the other success stories, and then how people were doing things. I would say a lot of the early influence, for good or for bad, came from Basecamp, the 37 Signals guys. They talked a lot about like bootstrapping, which didn't really, bootstrapping is not, it didn't really work for us, and I'll get into it later on why. But I was very attracted to a lot of their like design and building philosophies, and a lot of other people, right? All the success stories, and obviously the massive scale ones like Google and how all that, but also like smaller scale ones like Basecamp and how they did it. So I was really attracted to what works, and even in business school, I was very much interested a lot in building out, in company building, the idea of like how do you get people to, how do you build a team that's kind of inherently self-motivated, so that you can build a team of people that's genuinely happy to be working in that company. There were like a lot of different case studies that I focused on, read a lot of research papers on this. I kind of like, so I getting into business school, I knew that coming out of it, this is what I want to do. I kind of navigated the whole 2 years and focused a lot of my energy on learning about entrepreneurship, learning about company building and culture and self-motivation and all of that. So, yeah.
That's awesome. And I think that's good for listeners too, because sometimes I think people wait for inspiration or they wait for this one great idea to just strike them. And I think that's rarely how it happens. It's by, looking at different things, digging in, getting started, researching like you guys did, and then, being totally open to that some of them are going to be dead ends.
Exactly,
It's a little
and I
like,
think,
innovation, right? Inventors. I think, Edison, they say that he failed, thousands of times before
100%.
succeeded. And I think entrepreneurship is a little bit like that. You got to be willing to at least dip your toe in the water and talk to customers and test product ideas and be willing to be wrong.
Exactly, and that's a pattern that I continue to see that throughout my journey of Odoo, right? The important thing is, yeah, you may have an idea, but if it just sits and lives in your brain, it's of like no use. You have to try it out, and many times you'll fail. And what often happens is that you, once you get into this, it's like this, like it's a very complex problem space, right? You need to choose some entry point, and your entry point may not always be right. But once you get into it, you have to iterate. You have to keep listening to signals, and you have to improvise. And then it'll kind of like guide you in like a lot of different directions. And I keep seeing that at like micro scales, at pretty much everything that we do. In even in like new feature development, we decided to get into we get into an area, and then we think this is what we need to do. And then I talk to a lot of customers. I one thing that I do lately, and this is particularly this year, that I've been sitting in on a lot of sales calls. The benefit of that is I'm hearing firsthand from the customers on what they're looking for, right? And there's always gaps. There are always things that they want that we may not be solving, but it's constantly like feeding this machine in my mind on, okay, this is the next opportunity. So I'm always looking for the next opportunity where to expand. It doesn't have to be a drastic, and it, obviously it's like drastically different from what we do. I ignore it because I don't have the resources to go there, but it could be incremental from what we do. So I think it's the same thing. Like going back to what you said, you have to get in there, you have to tinker with it, and you have to try something out. And when you try it out, you will learn a lot about it, and then you'll figure out what the next move should be. So you have to like learn by doing, and then you do the next thing by learning from it. It's like an iterative loop, and that's very important. And
Mike Maples is the managing partner at
Floodgate.
Floodgate. And in his latest book, he talks about, I forget what it's called, but he talks about that, people are living in the future, and successful entrepreneurs are usually living in the future. And he says that Yeah, the future is already here. It's just not evenly distributed. I love that.
Yeah.
I love that saying because it's like that's where you come up the ideas. They don't just arrive. But if you work with
Yeah.
in new areas like in 2010, like you did, right in there in the emergence of the SMB e-commerce movement, and then you experiment with new things, that's when you discover innovations, right?
Exactly. Yeah. It's a lot about like tinkering, experimenting, and learning from it. You have to have a very open mind, and you need to be always looking for patterns. And if you see something interesting, to just like double click on it, explore that, and see is there something there. So yeah, just going back to it, it's not always about inspiration. It's about, I think you need to, I guess there are people who do it through inspiration too. I hear some of the stories, but in my experience, it's about you need to have the mindset that okay, yeah, you want to do this, but then explore and then figure out what exactly is the area that you want to get into.
The odds you're going to invent a wheel or some grand
Yeah.
thing that doesn't exist are pretty slim nowadays. It's
Yeah.
going to be with drive finding insights that other people haven't seen yet and how to apply new
Exactly.
technologies.
Yeah, I heard this really interesting heuristics. I was at the Shopify partner conference last week, and it was an interesting insight. So this guy, I think he was the head of product, who was saying that one thing you can look at if you're looking for new ideas is look at, are there things that rich people get to do that not so rich people don't get, right? And that's basically where the market is. And if you see an opportunity to close that gap, that means that okay, this is where like other people want to do it, but they cannot afford it. If you can bring it to the specific example he was talking about was personal shoppers. And I think this is Shopify's own bet. Shopify is betting that AI is going to make shopping a very different experience, that it's kind of going to trend towards personal shopping, right? So today you have to go seek out and like browse different websites and Amazon and figure out what product you're going to buy. They believe, and this is a bet they're making, we don't yet know if it's going to be right or not. The next phase of e-commerce would be AI is going to know what your tastes are, and AI is going to shop for you and then present to you just like a personal shopper will do for if you're like super rich. So that's a goal. So maybe that's a part. Where are rich people spending money? Like Airbnb for like vacations, or like what's the Wanderers, the new site, right, that does vacation rentals. Like you can go to all these fancy places, live in like a really nice house, which is something maybe 15 years ago you couldn't, like if you're not so well off, you couldn't afford to do it, but now you can do it, right? I know there are companies trying to do like is it what's the JS, like there's a company trying to do like whole personal jet experience, so at like a much lower price point. So that could be one way of looking at it, like look at what rich people get to do that not so rich people don't get to do, and then see can you bring it to the lower end of the market. So
Yeah,
I
I
think
think that's a
there are
great
several of these
metaphor. I love it.
Yeah, there are several of these heuristics you can use if you're looking for what's the opportunity you want to get into.
Hey, before I forget, when you talked about spending a summer in that sweaty warehouse, were you asking yourself, what the hell am I doing? Was there a moment, or did you always know that this was means to an end?
I always knew this was means to an end. What I knew, I think there is this concept that I really like called, I think called Via Negativa. I read it from Nassim Taleb, one of his books. So the core idea is that you often don't know what you want to do, but if you know what you don't want to do, then you rule that out, and that'll help you narrow down, right? So that was my mindset. I did not verbalize it in those terms, but the idea was that I clearly knew I don't want to be sitting in a cubicle in IBM, right? So that's something I clearly knew I did not want to do. So I was like, okay, I'm going to go to exact opposite of that, which is probably the sweaty warehouse in Austin, Texas. So when I did this, as long as this is not what, this is the exact opposite of like the stuff that I eliminated, I was like, yeah, I'm happy now because I'm at least pursuing something. I'm not stuck in that area of what I clearly eliminated. So, and it's a means to an end. I knew that obviously, if it's the long-term goal is not to be for me to be a warehouse operator, it was a means to like learning more about being in the customer's shoes and like understanding what their day-to-day pain is. And that is like, so I know Paul Graham talks about this. When you're launching a business, the best thing to do is like if you're solving your own problem, that's best because you understand the problem deeply, right? So if you're in the consumer space, yeah, you can do that. But if you are in, like, I'm in the B2B space, cannot always do that, because in order to really experience the problem, you actually need to build a business to a scale, right? So it's kind of like it doesn't really help you get there. So what that helped me understand is, without launching my own e-commerce business, I was able to be in the shoes of that entrepreneur, right? And when I sit in the sales call, that's exactly what I'm looking for. I'm really trying to understand, imagine what these customers are going through. And so either you live their life, or the next best thing is, like, talk to as many people as possible and then ask very deep questions to understand what you're trying to do. Yeah, just going back to your question, I kind of knew that, I
No, but
don't
that
think I
was the
ever
perfect
wondered.
answer. I mean, that's what I was assuming, right? Because it's, I think sometimes people are afraid to get their hands dirty, and they sit in an office and theorize and, have opinions about what the solution should do. But there's nothing that replaces actually, walking a mile in your customer's shoes, really
Exactly, yeah.
understanding at a deep level what the challenges are. What does it mean to print a label and, manage inventory and all this stuff? Then you see that, then you can truly understand them and build solutions to solve the problems.
Exactly, yeah. And another aspect of this, since you said, I think getting your hands dirty is super important, and even at different stages. And I think there are two types of leaders that I see. One, the kind of leader that I am, and I see a lot of, like, very successful people who follow that pattern, is that you get into the details, you get into the weeds, and, like, are always, like, looking for patterns. There are other successful leaders that I see, CEOs of very large corporations who are very top down, who are looking for patterns, who are operating using spreadsheets. That's a different mechanism too. But I can talk more about the first category, which I think I belong to. The beauty of that approach of, like, getting into the weeds is that very often the real diamond is, like, the big opportunities are hidden somewhere in the weeds, right? So when you get into the details, that's when you find the next big opportunity. And I see people like Toby, who's the CEO of Shopify. He talks a lot about, he still codes and he just builds stuff, right? He's always, like, working, because that's where I think he finds new opportunities. The HubSpot founder, Dharmesh, she talks about it. He spends a lot of time late night building his own things, like coding stuff. He's not doing, he doesn't need to do it, right? He's a multi-billionaire, but that's what drives him, and that's where he finds the next opportunity. And at a very small scale, I see the same too, right? When I'm, like, really tinkering and working into the details, looking at it, that's where I see the next opportunity. It's not, so I think it's, so in my own way, like, I do get hands dirty. I am playing around with a lot of different ideas, and I'm actually doing a lot of things which are usually, like, individual contributor kind of work. But doing that is important for me, because that's kind of what motivates me and it drives me. And once I see the pattern, then the next thing is, okay, now how do I extract this thing that I saw and systematize it and productize it? And then it needs to be, I need to have someone else operate it, right? So I'm always, like, I'm going and looking for the ideas with the intent that, okay, if it's a genuine idea and if I can validate it, I need to productize it, systematize it, and let someone else run it. And then I go looking for the next idea. So it's important to get your hands dirty. And particularly if you're an entrepreneur kind of CEO, I think you need to have that mindset, because top-down management, I think it works more like non-entrepreneur CEO, which is also a successful pattern. But if you're an entrepreneur CEO, I think your best bet is to, like, get your hands dirty.
Awesome. So let's go back to early days of Ordoro. You got it off. Yeah, tell me about, how did you get to MVP, your first product, your first customers? What was that journey like?
Yeah, it was a lot of struggle, and I want to touch upon this, like, bootstrapping idea. So very early on, I would say I was personally heavily influenced by Basecamp philosophy, so wanted to bootstrap. We did that path for about a year. So there were a lot of struggles, right, early on. So the first and obvious struggle in hindsight is that, so it was three of us, me and these other two, and all of us were, like, MBA students. We launched this company. It was a software company, but none of us were, like, true hardcore developers at heart. So I would say I had the most coding experience, but I'd never really built production software earlier. And pretty soon I realized that, okay, if I have to do this, I'm definitely not going to need like external help, right? So we're trying to launch a software company without like really a developer on hand. So we were figuring out, okay, how do we solve this problem? So we were still at UT when we launched the business. So the first approach was that, okay, we will try to figure out, are there like UT computer science students who are graduating who want to become join our team early on, pursue that path. Had like, met There were like a couple of guys who were interested, but that didn't work out because the moment they got like $100,000 to $150,000 job offer from a big corporation, they were like, I'm seeing money for the first time, I'm just going to go there, because we couldn't, they were bootstrapping, we couldn't afford to pay them, it was all for equity. So that path didn't work out well. So we kept searching, and then I met our technical co-founder in, it was actually a speed, an entrepreneur speed dating event organized by Capital Factory. Capital Factory, is like a big thing in Austin. So I met several, so the idea is that you meet like the non-tech focused people with tech focused people. So I met several of them, and one of them really, it really resonated. He was working for a large company at that time, and he wanted to kind of get out of that and then do something. So that's how we met, met our first technical co-founder. And then we also had like a contract developer at that time. So it was like two developers, and then we were trying to build it. So that's how we solved the technical piece of it, right? But then going back to the business side of it was still an idea. We needed to further validate it. We always wanted to get like our first beta customer. So the way we found our first beta customer is, we were still going through a lot of these forums and different sites to see how do we find cold calling people. We found someone who happened to be in San Antonio, who was selling online, and who had like asked a question in one of the forums about shipping and inventory management. So we tracked them down and we cold called them and said, okay, hey, we are students at UT. And by the way, that trick always works. Whenever you say you're students, people have a soft corner for you, and they'll help you. So we were still in school, so we told them we are students, and we want to learn more. So they answered all our questions. And towards the end of that call, 30-minute call, it was very clear to us that these guys are like a perfect fit for us to be a beta customer. And they happened to be in San Antonio. So we asked them, hey, can we just like drive over there? It's like an hour drive from Austin, right? And they were like very welcome. So we drove over there, we saw their warehouse operating, and kind of realized that this was a great fit. Another thing that really helped is that during the conversation, we both realized that the company that I used to work for, the founder of this company, she used to work at the same company several years ago. So that was an instant click, right? Now we have something in common, right? We both understand the same background. So she's like, yeah, I like what you guys are doing. I'm willing to be the beta customer if you have built something. And then when it's ready, a few months from now, if it all works perfect, I'll happily pay you guys whatever, it's like a couple of $100 a month, right? So that was a huge milestone for us. So now we had this one beta customer, we had these two developers, and by the way, all of this took several months of like hard work and failed attempts, but now we had a pattern. We had a customer, we had developers lined up. So we just started focusing on this customer's needs and started building it. And then in a few months, we had like a beta version of order already, and then we had them using it, and we had them using it day to day to fulfill their orders. And that was clear sign that this was working. In parallel, like the three of us were looking for how do we find the next customer, and then we
A
found
quick,
a handful. Yeah.
check out a quick question there. So you're saying you started looking for customers and basically signed up your first customer before the solution was even completed.
100%. Correct. Yeah. We didn't
That's
get
great.
paid for it before solutions completed, but we had a customer who was fully committed to using us with an understanding, a verbal understanding that they'll pay something reasonable. And what that amount was, we didn't decide. All we knew is that it's going to be a few $100. It's not going to be $10. It's not going to be $1,000. It'll be a few $100. And that's a level of agreement, right? And we actually had that customer before we had anything working. So that's the approach. And I still do this. Even today, when before we there was a feature idea, right? But I don't just go build that feature. I first look pitch the customers and see, is this going to work? And the customer commits to us saying that, okay, like I can give you a specific example. We are working on a new partner integration. which is about to be announced in like 3, maybe a couple of weeks. Before we wrote the first line of code to connect to that system, I actually lined up 4 customers who said that, okay, if you build this, we'll definitely use it, right? And we showed that we demoed Ordoro without that integration. They're like, this is exactly what we want. If you can build the connector, we will use it. We use their use case and we built the connector, and then now they are genuinely beta testing it. And then now, and we are iterating it. And once you know it works, we launch it. That's at the core of a lot of the things that I do. I believe that first you have to get the users before you go invest in building, and before you incur all the cost of building something, and because that's like, again, true validation that you're building something that that they need.
That's awesome. Thanks for sharing. I think that's sort of an entrepreneur of a hack that sometimes non-entrepreneurs don't quite appreciate, that you think that I need to have all these done things done, and there's always a chicken and egg problem, right? And
It
you know,
is, yeah.
how can I start this until I have that? And
Yeah.
I think that the answer is always something like what you just described. You gotta start with small chickens and small eggs, like Gemba, the
Exactly, yeah.
marketplace. How do we start? Do you get the suppliers first? Do you get the customers first?
Exactly, yeah.
You
Yeah.
can't get either without the other. So it starts just like you did. Find one, connect
Exactly,
two of
yeah.
them, and then you find another one.
Yeah, find one and you just have to build on it at small scale, and then it just gathers more momentum. And I strongly believe in that, and then I think that's the best way to do this, where it helps you in 2 ways. One is it helps keep your costs to the minimum, right? You're not wasting your resources on stuff that no one cares about. The second thing is it helps you with the iterative approach, because what you have in mind as an entry point, you may need to slightly course correct. And as you work with customers, that's the best way for you to course correct. And without usage, without customers, you never know if you're on the right track or not.
That's awesome. All right, so you shared customer one, then you got into customer number two. Was it one thing I wanted to ask, and three co-founders, similar skill sets. I think you described that. Do you have any thoughts on that? Any recommendations to founders? Like, should you look for complementary skill sets rather than
I
the
think
same?
yeah, I think yeah, I think it is an important thing. This was one of the problems we ran into when we pretty soon. So very soon we realized that, okay, bootstrapping, this is not going to work. So we decided to go raise a little bit of money, and I can talk more about that journey. But one of the things we realized early on when we are about to raise money is that exactly the problem that you're describing. Investors were saying that, okay, it's like very similar skill sets. You guys. Your team is not really diverse. It is not really complementary, right? So, in hindsight, yeah, I think having a mixed set of skills in the founding team is probably important. I would say that. And investors look for it. We had like two things going against us. One is that the fact that the founding team did not have true hardcore technical skills, and it was like very similar. Second thing was that I don't know how the VCs think about it, when at least at that time, VCs hate MBAs. And there were like 3 MBAs here. They were like, yeah, this is a huge red flag. So we ran into that problem a lot. So traditional VCs, but I mean, not, I don't want to say, I mean, there are some VCs who were able to look past it, and it was all fine. But that was actually, yeah, that was a red flag. And there were a lot of jokes about it, that VCs value, they take every developer and multiply that times like 500,000. And they subtract every MBA minus 100,000. So there's some jokes around it. I don't know if it's still true, but at least at that time, that was a big red flag for us when we were trying to raise money. So yeah, so the answer to your questions, yeah, I think diverse background helps. If you're depending on the space, I think domain expertise is very important. Technical skills are important, particularly if you're in software. You need to have a balanced team that knows. You need to have a lot of different skills, right? I'm a very product focused person. I would also say that you need to have a lot of like selling skills. I did not have selling skills when I first launched, but over time it's something you have to learn it. And I've learned that through a lot of hard work, and a lot of it is like faking it until you make it. You have to learn that. I would say if you're in tech space, you need to have the building skills, which is like product and coding and all of that. You need to also have the selling skills. If you have these two, that's the best combination for you to launch a business.
Well, I think I've been leading us astray a little bit. We're running out of time. There's a lot to
Yeah,
talk
it
about,
always happens, right? In these kind of conversations.
I hate to do this, but let's try to summarize, Orduras' journey over the next few minutes. Like, so we talked a lot about the early days, which I think is what our listeners really want to hear about. But then since then, you've run the business for 15 years
Correct,
ish,
yeah.
right? And you've grown it to 15, 20 people. Is that correct? How
Correct,
big is
yeah.
the team?
Seven,
Yeah.
15 people, yeah.
Yeah. So profitable. You raised a little bit of money early on, but then you've kind of bootstrapped it, or you run it profitably ever since. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Close to very similar to bootstrap philosophy in the sense that we don't have like massive amounts of money to go spend on like splurge, like how some of these like Bay Area massively VC funded companies do. So we have to always do it in like really small increments. But we have raised money. A lot of it is like angel investment. But that's how we have grown historically. And we are right now around 15 people.
Yep, that's awesome. And everyone's here in Austin. You guys in the office or?
Primarily, yeah, everyone was in Austin. So we had an office in downtown Austin till right before COVID. And during COVID, we all went like everyone was working from home.
Yeah.
And pretty soon we realized that we really don't need an office, so we gave it up. But the entire company was still based in Austin. But after that, what has happened is that some of the employees, they just realized that, okay, yeah, I'm working from home. I can move to another city where I have
Yeah.
family or like that's where my personal interests are. So people have moved, three or four people have moved away to other cities. But we are still technically official. I mean, most of the team is still based in Austin.
Yeah. Yeah. And give us, please, a couple minutes just on Ordura's value proposition. How do you help customers? What's the right sort of target customer?
Yeah, so our target customer is primarily someone who's selling through e-commerce. It's a small brand. We are going after small brands. We are not going after the large Fortune 500 companies. Typically, in terms of GMV, their annual revenue range, it could be anywhere from $1 million to $50 million. That's a range that we're looking at. Most of these brands are selling through platforms like Shopify or BigCommerce, Magento, WooCommerce, and all of that. And many of them are also selling through like the Amazon Marketplace, Walmart Marketplace, right? So if you are one of those brands, you have a really good storefront and you're selling through marketplaces, Ordoro helps you with everything that happens after the sale is captured in these marketplaces. So if you're shipping that order out of your warehouse, our shipping module will help you print out the shipping labels, communicate with your customers, give you discounted rates because we have negotiated rates with like Postal Service, UPS, and FedEx, and all that. If you're keeping track of your stock levels in a spreadsheets, Ordoro will help you automate all of that. So our inventory management module will help you with keeping track of stock, when you're running low on stock, how to reorder, keep track of the purchase orders coming in, barcode scanning while receiving. So all of that functions. We almost function like a lightweight warehouse management for that. And then the third area that we help people with is a lot of these brands also drop ship. Either they place an order on they get an order on Shopify. They may not fulfill it from their own warehouse. They may ship it out of a 3PL or directly from the manufacturer or from FBA. So we'll help you out. We have business rules to look at the order and then decide where are you going to ship it out of and automatically route the order. So there's a shipping module which helps you ship out orders very cost effectively and with minimal without making mistakes. There's an inventory management module that helps you keep track of your stock levels and restock and all of that. There's a drop shipping module that helps you ship out of third party locations.
Awesome. I can see that being super valuable. So many people like that doctor you described that, they have
Exactly,
a
yeah.
product, they're passionate about the product, but managing all the other stuff is really challenging. And that can
Exactly,
sink a
yeah.
business if you don't do it right.
Exactly. And in the operations, when it comes to warehouse operations, particularly when you're dealing with inventory, if you are not careful, that can be a lot of your cash can be tied up in it. And if you cannot move that inventory, that means you're paying like interest costs on it, and it can really sink your business. It can run into cash flow issues. So yeah, it's very important to keep track of your stock. If you don't fulfill orders on time, or if you take orders for products that you don't have, that can really sink your site website reviews, and so that can affect your business. So operations is very important. It's great to have that idea and the product and the marketing side, but particularly when it comes to e-commerce, you need to have someone who really understands operations. Without that, your business is not going to grow and it can have negative impact. So we help heavily on the operations side.
So if people want to reach out, they want to find Lordoro, where to go?
Just go to ordoro.com. You can sign up. We have a free trial, not credit card required. If you want to talk to someone, we just like book an appointment. There's a button right on the homepage, and then we can talk to you. We can help you evaluate if we are the right fit for you, and we can kind of walk you through that. So yeah, just go to ordoro.com to find us.
And that is ordoro.com, right?
Correct. Yes.
Awesome. So before we wrap up, any final advice that you can give? A lot of our listeners are entrepreneurs, or aspiring entrepreneurs, or people growing their businesses. What would be some final advice you would give them?
I think my biggest advice would be you have to just get started, right? Because what I see, and I see this in a lot of people, is that they all want to do something on their own and they have these ideas in their head, but they don't actually do anything because they think it's either too complicated or they're just waiting for the right moment. There is no such thing. You just have to do it. There are people start in when they are teenagers, when they are in their 20s, and I even see people who are launching new businesses in their 50s and even 60s. So you just have to do it. It doesn't matter. There's no age, there is no category. The important thing is that you have to do it. If you don't do it, you'll never know. And that's what you'll regret the most. So you just have to get in there, do it. And maybe you're wrong, but that's okay. You learn in that process, and then maybe you will like navigate to the thing that is actually the right answer. So you have to do it. You have to get into the arena and then start playing. That's the only way to get it done.
Yeah, and I'd encourage almost anyone to do it, right? With we have kids, one in college, one in high school, and they're looking at what education do you get today to get a job 5 years from now, right? Because AI is eating all the entry level
Exactly,
jobs, and soon all types of jobs. So the my advice to them is like start a business. That's that is a skill set that will always be in demand.
Yeah, and it's so much fun. Even if you fail, and this is a thing that I used to speak a lot about this in the very early days, that there's a very good chance that when I was launching that it'll never take off, right? It'll fail after reaching a point. But for me personally, it won't be a failure because the amount that of stuff that I had already learned in that 1 or 2 years, early years, and what I'm continuing to learn now, it's so valuable that I can translate that to another area. And yeah, there's always threats in the market, like AI is now the biggest threat. But once you go through this, you see so many different aspects of running the business. You learn so much about the world. You're forced to learn so many skills that you can translate that. So I would say that's a better bet than you getting siloed into a particular area in a white collar job, and that job is eliminated, where now you cannot, those skills are not translatable, right? Whereas in entrepreneurship, you're learning so many generic skills that you can then translate to other areas. So I would highly recommend it.
That's awesome. Jagat, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy life and being on our podcast. Really enjoy the conversation and look forward to future partnership between Gemba and Ordoro.
Awesome,
Thanks
thank you.
again.
Yeah, it was great talking to you. And then, yeah, I look forward to working with you guys very soon.
And thanks everybody's listening. Please subscribe below to make sure you don't miss an episode. Thanks and have a great day. All righty, this is Henrik Johansson again. Thank you so much for listening to Innovator Insights from Idea to Impact. If you are a successful product entrepreneur, or you work in a company that creates new products, and you have an interesting story about how you developed your product and brought it to market, and you would like to be on this podcast, please go to Gemba.com and click on podcast, and you can fill out an application to be on the podcast. Would love to hear from you. If you liked this podcast, you enjoyed this interview, and we would greatly appreciate if you would share it on social media. You can just do a quick screenshot with your phone and text it to a friend, or post it on socials. If you know anyone that you think would be a great guest, please tag them on social media and let them know about the show, and include the hashtag Innovator Insights. And would love to see your post and any suggestions you have to guests. That's how we find most of our guests, from suggestion from other listeners. We're regularly putting out new episodes and new content to make sure you don't miss any episodes. Please go ahead and subscribe. Your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show and it means a ton to me and the team. We really appreciate it. Do you want to know more about Gemba, me, or the podcast? Please go to gemba.com and click on podcast, or you can follow me on LinkedIn. That's where I do most of my posts. Again, thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next time. Have a great day.